Greetings and welcome to a ghost edition of the Cathartic Yardstick Podcast with Ray and Mark. Ooh, something's creeping up on me and it's not my underwear.
Thanks for joining us on the podcast. If you listened last time, you learned time travel is impossible. Necco wafers are going to disappear, and we both have father issues.
And Ray cannot pronounce cigar box.
It's cigar. I cannot say it. So, but you know, if you feel you've accidentally stumbled into an on-air co-therapy session, don't worry. Pull up a chair and enjoy the show. Also, a note about factual accuracy. We do aim to be factually accurate, but this is the equivalent of two guys running into each other in a bar or in a barber shop or at the checkout line at the grocery store. So we're aiming for that level of factual accuracy.
But in the bar, there are no photographs of Tom Dalton. I just want to say that for those of you who referred to the last episode, if you're wondering what I'm talking about.
That's right. Well, some bars around here, there may be some pictures of Tom Dalton, but not just any pictures. There may be the picture of Tom Dalton.
The picture. I had a little PTSD because I did check it, and I did see it again.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did check your website.
Oh, okay. Website. All right. Yep. Well, speaking of the website, we are on online, which you probably know if you're listening to this, but just in case, it is catharticyardstick.com. And since the last time we've done one of these, we've added links to social media. We have an account on Instagram and also one on Twitter. And you can follow us on either of those, and you'll be notified when we release a new episode. So what are we talking about today, Mark?
Cigar boxes.
Cigar boxes.
Ghosts.
Ghosts, yes. I would say that ghosts was the reason we started this whole podcast idea.
As a matter of fact, as I think back to college, even when as roommates, you know, it's like the lights are out, you're about ready to zonk out. It's like, hey, Ray, you want to tell ghost stories? I remember those days. This has been a long-standing thing. I thought one good way to kick it off is to generally talk about why it is that humans want or need to believe in something like ghosts, because I think it's kind of a universal. I was doing some reading, and I saw that in 2013, there was a Harris poll that said that 42% of Americans say they believe in ghosts. And in the UK, it was even higher. About 52% of people surveyed believe in ghosts. And there was one college study that was done at a large university down in the South. And of the student body surveyed, there was actually more than 28%. It was 28.5% of the students surveyed said that they'd personally experienced a paranormal experience. And so, I started making a list of things that I think would start explaining why it is that people really want to connect with this. And I think the most obvious to me is wrestling with our own mortality. Do we live and then keel over and then that's just it? There's nothing? And also dealing with loss. I mean, we have these loved ones that loom incredibly large in our lives. And then do they just keel over and there's nothing and that's the end? Or are we all reunited someday or can we contact them?
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody that hasn't had that kind of experience or definitely knows somebody who's had one of those experiences. And they tend to be, you know, people who are otherwise reasonable, rational, but they've had these experiences that they just cannot explain.
Yep, I think that's true. And also, the way I've always viewed it is, even though this is separate and distinct from religion, I think if you can open your mind to the concept of life after death in a religious context, then it's, in my mind, a lot of other things become possible as well. You know, why would we assume that there can be no perceptions from the other side, piercing the veil? My personal view of religion, as it all ties into this, is, you know, I think that there is something greater that transcends what humans can grasp. And it's always a struggle to try to understand within human terms and limitations the infinite. And so there's the possibility in my mind that all religions are basically true in the sense that they're each culture's attempt to try to understand, in human terms, the transcendent, the unknowable. And, you know, I think I've read before that concepts like the Trinity, virgin birth, life after death, they aren't unique to Christianity, but you'll see them in Far Eastern religions and some African tribal religions. And it's kind of cool because it's kind of difficult to say something like, oh, well, the commonality is that they were all in the same trade routes. And so, you know, oral traditions just spread the whole thing.
I think generally that that's a pretty universal experience, that there's something else besides just ourselves, and how that gets expressed is very much part of a cultural filter. So you have these experiences and they get filtered through a cultural lens, and that's how you end up expressing them.
And the other thing I was kind of, I've suspected in my own mind, the way I see it, is you take, you know, prophets, you know, Jesus, Allah, Buddha, you have these amazing individuals who somehow can transcend, pierce the veil into the infinite and just perceive what's there and then bring it back to their followers and help bridge the gap between the human condition and the infinite. And what I always think is, if a prophet can have a full experience on the other side, then as flawed and as feeble and as limited as we are as regular humans, is it too much to believe that some individuals who are very perceptive, you know, might have the ability to occasionally just get a glimpse? And I think that's within the realm of possibility.
I tend to be a little more skeptical than you, but, you know, which is a little ironic since I'm a former seminarian. But I'm open to the idea that there is something besides us. I mean, there's a real rampant materialism around today. I don't mean the acquisition of material goods. I mean the belief that there's nothing but the material and that's it. There is no other reality other than what we experience through our senses.
Right. No, I agree with you. And I think the skepticism is good because what it does is it keeps the conversation more grounded. Because what it'll do is those questionable experiences, it helps give you those alternative facts that, yeah, it's true. It may not have been what I might otherwise have thought it was. But by the same token, what it does is it adds more meaning to those experiences that you just cannot explain. You can look at them as coincidence or as something possibly intentional, but keeping it grounded still opens up a lot of interesting things. And I also thought, one possibility is that if it's true that if you're a particular type of person having this experience, it's very possible that it's real, but it's happening on a very personal level. So you're not going to have this ghost hunters kind of experience where you capture it on videotape and four people hear the same thing. It might be a very personal experience, but it may be real.
Yeah, I've seen bits and pieces of those ghost hunter shows, and I've seen absolutely nothing convincing on them. I mean, you might see a little bit of a smudge, like in a photograph down a dark hallway, right, or something, but that's pretty much the extent of it.
Normally, I just see people screaming through night vision goggles and running around. You're going, what the heck did you run into?
Yeah.
So I'm left unfulfilled.
So that's it. We all want to be fulfilled. We want to have that spiritual or otherworldly experience, as much as it may terrify us. And which I think is a good segue into my first experience with something like this, which was a Ouija board, which is many people's first experience with something in this realm. And it happened when I was, I would say, maybe like second, third grade. We were down kid's basement, lived down the street from me, just all hanging out, and this family had every single game that ever existed on a wall in their basement, and one of the things was a Ouija board, which has taken on quite an ominous meaning now, the Ouija boards, very ominous aura about it. But back then, it was just kind of a parlor game. Kids did it without thinking too seriously about it. So we took the board out and we're playing with it and we're just asking questions and not much is happening. The planchette's not moving at all. So we said, okay, if there are any spirits here, give us a sign in 1 minute. So we looked at the clock and the second hand was right around the, 12, and we watched it go around slowly. And just as it came back to the 12, this huge gust of wind came right through the windows in the basement, blew open the curtains, and we just dropped and ran out of there. It was weird, and it made me never want to fool around with a Ouija board again. Yeah, one of the things we were glad is we didn't run into Zozo, which is a modern, it's kind of urban folklore, but if you sit with a Ouija board and it starts saying Zozo, if you ask the spirit's name, Zozo is a demonic entity that supposedly enters people's lives through Ouija boards.
Yikes.
And once you get Zozo, Zozo is almost impossible to get rid of. And I say, if that ever happens, just stop immediately. But yeah, if you look that up online, you'll see that there is such a thing. And it's a known entity that people have encountered, whether it's just urban folklore and people already know about it. And it just happens to manifest itself through what's called the ideomotor response. I don't know, but it's not something I'd want to mess around with.
Wow. You know, one thing I was going to talk about before I hit, my experience, but I was going to talk a little bit about two observations. One, I was going to talk a little bit about what I read concerning how the human mind works that helps explain why people might think they ran into a paranormal experience. But I also have to mention something where I get really kind of torn about is when it comes to Ouija boards and the typical kind of seance kind of thing you see on TV where it's like, tell the spirit is lost, tell it to head towards the light. You know, I'm thinking to myself, here we are, there's some transcendent realm and some product made by Milton Bradley is going to open portals and let people in or out, or, some spirit is no longer constrained to your corporal body or the temporal reality as you know it, and you're going to give it guidance on, how to find the 7-Eleven. I mean, I find that kind of tough.
The whole seance thing started, in the Victorian era. There was a whole spiritual movement in response to, there were a lot of technological innovations. There was a second industrial revolution. People were getting dissatisfied with conventional religion, and they started to turn into this stuff. I mean, it was exciting, it was entertaining, it was maybe a little bit dangerous, and you had all these these mediums that kind of took advantage of that. And in doing some research for this, I was in the garage late at night on the laptop doing some show prep, and I Googled ectoplasm, and I pictures of ectoplasm, and scared the heck out of myself.
Yeah, anything I say about following the light or Ouija boards, I have to preface it by both of them will scare the crap out of me. But it's just the intellectual exercise. I've always kind of wondered, what is it a human being who's still here would have to offer somebody on the other side to help give them guidance?
Right. Yeah, you would assume once they've entered that state that they know more about what's going on than we do.
Yeah, you would think so. So. The other thing I was thinking of mentioning is in terms of how the human mind works, as I've done some reading, I have run into authors who basically argue that humans have a real tendency to see causal, intentional relationships, even where they don't exist. And that's really because of an evolutionary standpoint. It's very advantageous. Humans tend to look at patterns and presume they're deliberate. For example, we might see faces in random images. And if we run into occurrences or sounds that defy explanation, we may see them as paranormal.
Or see Jesus in a piece of French toast.
Oh, like you haven't,
Right. Who hasn't,
Elvis,
really?
Elvis in a pancake.
Right.
That kind of thing. But I've also read that there was one particular professor of psychology at the University of London who not only agreed with that, but argued that hallucinations are actually more common than people think. They say, as an example, he basically says the phenomenon of sleep paralysis, which I think a lot of people have experienced, where you're in that, what was it, REM sleep, where you're your brain kind of disconnects your motion so that you're not acting out all your dreams.
Right.
Well, they say that 30 to 40% of people have experienced it where you're awake, you just can't move, sleep paralysis. And about in that state, about 5% of the people actually report visual or auditory experiences. Mm-hmm. And in China, they call it ghost depression. And in Thailand, the term translated to English is ghost covered. And in Newfoundland, they actually call it a visit from the old hag.
Right, the old hag syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's kind of interesting. And I myself have had, woken up to the degree you are awake, but in sleep paralysis where you can kind of hear this mumbling, and it probably was me, but it's just my motor skills are turned off like they normally are.
Right. Yeah, I've done that too, and it scares the heck out of Michelle, which I apologize, Michelle, for that. But we should talk about that. We should definitely have an episode on dreams, because I think that's a very significant part of most people's experience.
Yeah, I think so. Well, are you ready for my story?
I would love to hear your story.
Okay. This one, I'm only going to have one story here, but mine's lengthier, but I tried to organize this. But this one is about my older brother, who passed away in 2001. As a preface, he's a very interesting guy, wicked smart, a fantastic courtroom attorney, bigger than life character, life of the party kind of guy. And so, I've got another brother, so there were three of us, and we had the same twisted sense of humor. And so we would just ping off each other, trying to shock each other and outdo each other. And so people got great entertainment by watching us all be idiots. And one of his routine jokes they would always pull out is as we would meet people, he would point at me and say, yeah, he's taller, but I'm smarter and better looking. And so you could see it coming a mile away. He's taller, but I'm the smarter and better looking brother. So, file that away. He was 14 years older than I. And so as the little brother, my job was always trying to close the gap, and get to be closer and have more in common with my, older sibling. He passed in 2001, and I was stationed in the middle of the Mojave Desert. And so I came home to upstate New York for the funeral. And, I returned home, and, obviously I was, devastated. But, geez, these things happen. It's the unpleasant part of the circle of life. But, it's all natural. But the first thing that kind of stood out to me as being kind of odd is I wasn't feeling the way I expected. I would have expected to be very sad, and then feeling this horrible distance and feeling this horrible regret that we just wouldn't be old geezers with a lot in common. But instead, I didn't feel distance. I felt proximity. I felt almost like he was part of me. I'd never felt closer. And so that was kind of comforting. But I noticed that that feeling would just get more and more pronounced. Within a few days, that sensing you get where you just jump because it feels like somebody's behind you? That was happening at home. It was happening at work. And it started getting a bit distracting.
Now, was this just kind of that vague feeling? Was there any, see anything, hear anything?
No.
Anything else happen? Okay.
No, but it was more than a vague feeling. It was a very pronounced feeling like, oh my God, somebody's there. And then you turn around and there's nobody there.
Mm-hmm.
But it got to be annoying because it kept happening so often. And I'm just going about my normal sort of business. By about a week after I returned back, it was really to the point of distraction. And I was talking to Susan about it, my wife, and I said, the only way I can explain it is it's kind of unnerving because it feels like I'm parked across the street from an incredibly powerful radio station and my dial is set just a fraction off. And so I can't quite make out the garbled noise I'm hearing, but I know if I make the slightest adjustment to the dial, it's going to come through really loud. And it's almost like I'm trying to be told something, and I can't quite make it out. And so it was really unnerving. And at one point, like I was falling asleep one night, and I started feeling that, you know, somebody's right there next to me, but I'm just, you know, trying to fall asleep. And I actually felt a pressure on my leg, almost like somebody put their hand on my thigh, which of course he would do just to freak me out. But it's like, you know, so I sit bolt upright. But it was almost like it was getting to be a combination of nervous, unsettled, but also very frustrating because this was just so chronic. And so there was a road that, I mean, in order to find this military installation, you had to drive on Route 15 in Southern California and until you're in the middle of nowhere. And then you make a left and go 40 miles. And so we would refer to it as the world's largest cul-de-sac. Mm-hmm. But I was on this 40-mile road, and I started feeling it again. And I was so sick of it that I literally pulled the car over. I was by myself. And knowing that you're almost daring the fates, and you're almost trying to punch through this veil, as I basically said, "What? What? You're trying to tell me something, and I just can't quite make out what it is. The only vibe I'm getting is two messages. One, you're sorry. You're sorry for wasted time. And also, you're proud of me." Those are the two things I'm picking up. And of course, nothing happened, and I just kept driving. But I noticed after that, it started dissipating. And fast forward, the thing that kind of puts it in context is I didn't mention that to anybody in the family. And I have a close family member who months later happened to be talking to somebody. It's interesting. Somebody who was a medium, but my family member wasn't talking to them as a medium. They was talking to them as a kind of like a life coach. And just chatting. And so it wasn't something like, "Hi, I want to contact Uncle Al." I mean, that wasn't a conversation at all. But it was interesting. They had their conversation, and my family member was leaving, and this medium asked, "Is there anything else I can help you with?" And so almost as a flippant aside, my family member said, "Yeah, I recently had a death in the family," referring to my brother, and said, "So how's he doing?" And so the medium said, "All right, well, hold on, let me see." The medium sits down and then basically says, "Okay, you'll have to tell me if it makes sense, because it makes no sense to me. It might make sense to you." But he basically says, "I'm picking up a couple things." He says, "You got to be so old, but it's okay because I'm still the better looking."
Interesting.
And then he basically says, "The other thing I pick up is," and this makes no sense, he says, "I'm sorry." And so I heard that and goose flesh all over the place. And I said, "All right, now I got my side of the story, and this ought to freak you out." And so I shared my side of the story. But that's my biggest single life experience, I think.
Yeah, that is interesting. I had an interesting experience. Everything's interesting. I had an interesting experience.
Fascinating.
Fascinating. An otherworldly experience in our house that may have just been a floater in my right eye, or if it had just ended there, but it continued. And what happened was, I was up late one night doing dishes, and, you know, we put the kids to bed. This was years ago. And I'm in the kitchen, and it's maybe about 11 o'clock at night doing the dishes. And we have, the kitchen has, you know, an opening into the dining room and an opening into the hallway of the house. And I turn around and look towards the hallway, and I see this short figure run by. My younger daughter, who would have been about 3 at the time, had a history of escaping from the crib. She would throw pillows down on the floor and go over the wall and land on the pillows. And I thought maybe she had just gotten out of her crib. So I start talking to her. And I walk into the living room, and there's nobody there. So I run upstairs, and she's asleep. So I think, all right, maybe it was just whatever, negative after image of something I was looking at, or floater, or whatever. But this happened several times, where I'd be, you know, kind of late at night when it was quiet, I'd be doing dishes or doing something in the kitchen, and I would look towards the hallway and see this short figure about the size of a toddler run across into the living room. So I didn't think much of it. And we started calling her Tiny Tina, which is not an original name. That's a name out of my mother's pantheon of characters. So one night I have a dream, and it's a very vivid dream. And I'm standing in the girl's room, our daughter's room, and there's this figure there. It's a figure of a woman. She's tall and thin and dressed in clothing from maybe, you know, end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century. And I can't really look right at her. If I look right at her, I can't see her. But if I kind of turn my eyes to the side, I can see her in my periphery vision. And she starts talking to me. She says, "My name is not Tiny Tina. My name is Mary. I don't like you calling me Tiny Tina."
Wow.
I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." And then she said, "I'm not a little kid, but I like appearing as a small child."
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's a hell of a floater, right?
Yeah. So I mean, if it just been just the something running by the hallway, or thinking you see something running by the hallway late at night, I would have said, "Yeah, it's probably nothing." But I don't know. It was a very vivid dream. And the thing that about it too was, I mean, I've had dreams about ghosts. I think everyone has. Usually your dreams about ghosts are pretty frightening, pretty terrifying. It's something very scary. Nothing about this was scary. You know, I felt like, you know, she wasn't there haunting us. She didn't have issues. It wasn't unfinished business. She wasn't upset that we were living here. It's something she liked to do. I don't know, maybe in her space, but she didn't seem upset about it. And this is just what she did. And it stopped after that for a long time. But every once in a while, I'll be in the same situation where I'm doing dishes late at night, and I turn to the hallway, and I just briefly see what looks like a small child just running down the hallway.
That's amazing. It just means that, you know, however your nervous system runs and whatever your perceptions are, you're in tune with it. You see it. It's there. You know. So
Mary's got no agenda. I think she just, at least from the feeling I got from the dream, was she just enjoys doing this.
Well, I'll tell you, if you introduce me to Mary when I'm sleeping over at your house, I hope you've got a lot of laundry and cleaning supplies.
There you go. Now, see, that's the thing. It on the surface, it's kind of creepy, kind of scary, but my actual experience was not at all scary. Even after I realized that wasn't, you know, one of the kids running down the hallway, it was something else. Maybe it was nothing else. I don't know.
And I think a lot of this is very routine. It's just people's routines, what was important to them, where might they choose to go back to. And it's just people business. In my case, you know, maybe it was a larger-than-life relative who just had a message to convey because he left unfinished business. But it's just humans talking. Why would I be afraid if my brother was trying to tell me something? It was really the way it was happening and the fact that I couldn't get my head around it that I found problematic, troubling, a little spooky, kind of annoying, but sort of like, wow. I mean, this is just, grief is not manifesting the way I thought it would. And so the question is, can it all be explained by grief? I don't know. Right. So what does it mean?
I don't know. Yeah.
And then having that secondary experience from the relative who went to the medium, I found just freaky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the question I still have then is, how come there's no proof? You know, there's surveillance cameras everywhere now. Everyone's got a cell phone. Shouldn't we have some sort of proof by now that ghosts exist? There have been so many people that have come and gone that you know, there's potentially a lot of spirits out there floating around. How come we have no solid evidence that they exist?
What did you think of what I mentioned earlier? I mean, but the idea that perhaps what it is it's a highly personal experience. And so it's not something like I suppose you could have a poltergeist kind of experience, in which case you should have multiple witnesses as right. The boss goes flying across the room into the wall. Or the crucifixes all get hung upside down. Red rum appears in your mirror. I mean, that ought to have multiple witnesses. But just the normal daily business of a paranormal experience. Maybe it's highly personal. I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either.
We'll have to ask the cigar box.
Ghosts. I think that ghosts are something that pretty much everyone has had some level of experience with, whether it just be thinking you saw something, hearing a voice, whether you're just terrified that something like that might happen. It seems to be a pretty universal experience. The thing about my experiences, the one with Mary, was that it wasn't what I expected. Kind of the stereotypical haunting experience is something that's absolutely terrifying. Maybe that's just popular culture. Maybe that's just something in the collective unconscious. I don't know, but maybe, you know, people's actual experiences are much more benign than culture would have us believe.
And I think it would be interesting if you told us your ghost stories. Write them in. What have your experiences been?
Yeah, we'd love to hear them.
And what are your theories? What's the answer? We're looking for the answer. We're searchers, we are.
You've been listening to the Cathartic Yardstick, deemed to be uncringeworthy by millennials. Could be. I mean, I tend to be a little more skeptical.
Cigar box.
I tend to be a little more skeptical.